The beautiful shoreline, the calming sound of Lake Michigan, the glorious sunrise, the warm June afternoons. This is Wisconsin Lakeshore Luther Hostel on the campus of Concordia University, Wisconsin, June 11th through the 14th, 2011. The program, Dr. Paul L. Meyer, professor of history at Western Michigan University and frequent guest on Issues Etc. Hit the topic, the Crescent and the Cross, Islam and Christianity. Dr. Meyer will cover the historical background of Muhammad, the rise of Islam around the world, the beliefs and practices of this world religion, and what its future may hold. In addition, the four-day, three-night Luther Hostel includes interesting day trips to area attractions. For details how you can register for Wisconsin Lakeshore Luther Hostel, sponsored by the Concordia Bible Institute on the campus of Concordia University, Wisconsin, visit the Concordia Bible Institute website at www.concordiabible.org or phone 262-243-4343.
We know that one of the things our listeners love most about Issues Etc. is the variety of topics and guests that we bring to you on a regular basis. It is our pleasure to do so. It is a little sometimes difficult to keep track of. We've given away for you to help promote Issues Etc. with your fellow parishioners on Sunday morning and also know what there is to listen to at Issues Etc. Right there at our website, issuesetc.org, if you click support, you're going to find a bulletin blurb, a little blurb that can go into your church bulletin on Sunday morning. It's there available early in the week for you to give to your secretary or your pastor, take over to the church office, ask them to include it in the bulletin. It tells not only you, but everyone else in the congregation what Issues Etc. is talking about. We appreciate your help in not only supporting, but also promoting Issues Etc. Issuesetc.org. Click support and look for the church bulletin blurb provided for you there every week. The media coverage of the unrest in the Middle East is one of those fluid things, changing every day. Are there any indicators that we can look for in the ever-changing revolutionary tide in Egypt and elsewhere that can help us understand where it is all going? Joining us to talk about media coverage of unrest in Egypt and a new app for the confession of sins that's been widely misreported, Terry Mattingly. He's founder and editor of GetReligion.org, director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, and he writes a weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
You have said, you have written several times now, that the plight of the Coptic Christians in Egypt should be a chief indicator to everybody covering that story of how things are generally going post-revolution. Why?
Well, I guess two things. One is that religious liberty and the rights of religious minorities is almost always a great way to judge what the actual human rights are in a society. It's known as the first freedom for a reason. It's that and freedom of the press, the two flip sides of the amendment, are things that tend to vanish, you know, pretty quickly when people try to establish control over the people of a country. So when I say that the Copts are particularly important, I'm essentially saying two things. Religious minorities are always critical, and of course there are other religious minorities in Egypt to watch, but the Coptic Christians are particularly important because they're so ancient. I mean, the Coptic language is the language we have remaining from ancient Egypt. And second, they're big. I mean, they are approximately 10% of the Egyptian population, which is a significant number of people. I mean, much larger than, you know, several key minorities here in the United States. So there's a lot of them. They're ancient, and they are a religious minority. You put those three things together. If you care about human rights in a society, in a complex society like Egypt, you got to pay attention to them. I keep calling them the canary in the coal mine of human rights in Egypt. And that's not something that's new. That's not in this story. That's like in the extensive recent history of Egypt, or the entire history of Egypt after the rise of Islam.
Could we extend this this principle that you've established here for Egypt to what's been happening previously in other Islamic-controlled countries with Christian minorities? Could we say that perhaps the future of Iraq is largely told today on in terms of how the Christian minority in Iraq is being treated.
Well, yeah, that's a fascinating point. And part of the problem is we seem to see this only in hindsight. In other words, we say, obviously, American policies in Iraq have largely failed or have been largely problematic. After all, look at the flight of the Christian minority from that nation. This is a valid point. All I'm saying is it's also possible to raise these questions before the exodus begins. In other words, you can look for the journalistic signs that a story is developing, a collision is developing. You can, right now, everyone's trying to get their hands on a new letter that's come out from Al-Qaeda specifically addressing the situation with the cops in Egypt. That's a valid news story. And there are valid stories, by the way, on both sides, and I stressed this in my, you know, in my post. At the same time that you have some positive things going on in terms of interfaith work and interfaith politics and discussions and dialogues in Cairo, and it would be wrong to ignore those, you have the Egyptian military, and the Egyptian military is in control right now, actually attacking some monasteries in other parts of the country. So this is a good news, bad news situation at the moment. And I'm just trying to see that I'm trying to say that the journalists need to be covering both sides of that equation. There is no one Muslim stance in Egypt. Egypt is way too complex for that. So there isn't just one story of what's happening between Muslims and the cops in Egypt. There are multiple stories, and I don't think any of them need to be ignored.
So generally up to this point, still unfolding, how do you think the journalistic community is doing on covering the real unfolding revolution, especially vis-a-vis religious minorities and religious freedom?
I think they're about halfway there. Like I said, they're covering any signs of positive cooperation. I mean, take, for example, the tremendous symbolic gesture of Muslims choosing to worship with Christians at Christmas and the Coptic New Year after the bombing of the cathedral. The terrorist attack on the cathedral, you actually had Muslims choosing to serve as human shields to, in effect, help protect Christians. Very important story. At the same time, however, attacks on the Christian community, the murdering of a priest, the military firing live ammunition at, you know, defenseless monks who are trying to guard a fence to protect their compound, you know, during civil unrest. That's an important story, too. Is there one message out of this? No, there isn't. We don't know what the outcome is at this point. And the press sometimes, I think, does a much better job of when it's covering a story it doesn't necessarily understand or emotionally or intellectually get, as we say, get religion. They have a tendency to kind of want to wait till the whole thing settles out. And, you know, lots of people can be injured and die, and whole societies can change. But we sit saying, well, you know, the story really isn't over yet. Let's just wait till it's done. This story is not done right now. It is just developing. But then again, so is the situation in Egypt, period. Nobody thinks this is over to any extent.
Our thought process was, well, let's build something for everybody that everyone can use, and let's build it so that the church doesn't get upset at it. After you go through that examination, you sort of check off things that you may have done. You actually take the iPad or iPhone into the confessional, and it will literally step by step walk you through the entire process.
That's Patrick Linen. He's co-creator of a new app for confession of sins called Confession. Terry, I'm curious about this. The coverage was almost immediately that people are going to be opening their iPhones and confessing their sins to the phone and then somehow being virtually absolved of their sins. Was that accurate?
Well, I don't think that all reporters got it wrong, but significant numbers did. And when you have something as big as the Times of London getting it wrong, you know, the Economic Times and a couple of other key institutions simply getting the story wrong from the get-go, that began to mess up the coverage. And there's no question the sexier story is, you know, you can somehow say your confession to a priest or record it and send it by digital file to, I never got an image in my mind of what they thought the app was going to do. I read a lot of the coverage, obviously, and I never got a handle on how this virtual priest was supposed to be there, let alone how that virtual priest somehow individualizes a virtual penance to a real live individual or a virtual sacrament to this person. It was, I fear it was a classic case of the press just wanting to go with the rather shallow, funny, and somewhat frivolous story. Only in this case, you were dealing with sacraments, and people don't tend to think of those as rather frivolous or funny, let's just put it that way. Don't make jokes about the sacraments when you're dealing with the ancient liturgical churches.
Well, when we come back from this break, I actually downloaded the confession app. I took a look at it. Just, you know, you do want to see what it is. Apparently, a lot of the journalists that were writing about it didn't go even that far to just check it out and see what it was and what it wasn't. I didn't find a virtual priest. I didn't find a way actually even to confess sins. It is more or less just a guide to prepare for confession. We'll see what Terry Mattingly has to say about that on the other side of the break. We're coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon, March the 1st. Terry Mattingly is our guest. He's founder and editor of GetReligion.org, director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, and he writes a weekly on religion column for Scripps Howard News Service. Oh, by the way, we're working on an app, too. Now, we are not ready to release it. It's an Issues Etc. iPhone app. We're not ready to release it. It's still in the works. And in order for you to help us do that job, actually, a very generous listener is helping us do that job. We need some people to help us test the so-called beta of this Issues Etc. iPhone app. We're not going to let everybody do it because there's a limited number of feedback and input that our developer needs for it. But we've given you a way of going and helping test the beta of the Issues Etc. iPhone app. Just join us at Twitter. Our Twitter address, look up Twitter, Google it, and then enter our Twitter address at IssuesETC. Follow us, and you'll find there a tweet that will give you a link to the beta of the upcoming Issues Etc. iPhone app. We'll be right back with Terry Mattingly.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly. issuesetc.org. Stay connected. issuesetc.org.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. live on most smartphones? Just go to the Listen Live page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the smartphone link, and you can listen on your smartphone weekday afternoons between 3 to 5 Central. Old Theology, New Technology, Issues Etc. now broadcasting live to the world on most smartphones. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on the 2011 International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights in Strasbourg, France.
The listeners to Issues Etc. already have had contact through the program with lecturers who will be in Strasbourg this next summer. Craig Parton, myself, Dr. Minuge, Angus Minuge, Adam Francisco, and these lecturers are people who have defended the faith, who know how to defend the faith, and who are marvelous communicators. And so, if a listener to this program wants to learn how to present the case for Christianity in a secular situation, the 2 weeks in the French Rhineland with us would be an absolutely ideal way to achieve this.
You can find out more about the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, July 5th through the 16th in Strasbourg, France, at apologeticsacademy.eu. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about a new app for the confession of sins, widely misreported as a way of confessing your sins to or through your iPhone, sometimes even mentioning a virtual priest. And it's interesting, Terry, because I actually, before we came on the air, downloaded the app, just looking through it. And a simple perusal shows no virtual priest. It actually has some pretty solid stuff for preparing for one to confess his or her sins.
Yeah, and the other thing is, in effect, it's an interactive version of something that has been around perhaps even for centuries. I mean, I carry one in my wallet because I'm an Eastern Orthodox Christian. I have a very simple guide to confession that's in my pocket. So the whole idea that someone who might have an examination of the conscience, some sort of guide that kind of walks them through their life and prods them, that's nothing new at all. What's new about the app is this idea that once you've entered certain basic information about yourself, or once you have put into your app that you struggle with certain types of issues, this app apparently changes directions and changes its questions and leads you back through the material in your life that has been troubled and is troubling. Now, that sounds fairly innovative to me. But the key is that it's only an innovation on this very, very traditional concept of a guide to confession. It has nothing whatsoever to do with saying confession, other than the fact that you might write some notes to yourself, you might prepare a list of things that you want to discuss with your priest, so that you wouldn't get there that evening. You would get so involved in discussing one particular sin or one particular struggle in your life and then forget things. It's kind of like scribbling notes in the margins, you know, of your guide to confession, except you're doing that electronically. That's all interesting, but it doesn't have anything to do with changing the nature of a person confessing his sins to Christ with a priest present representing the body of Christ, you know, in that process. No change at all there.
The misreporting actually led to a response from the Vatican. What was the nature of that?
Oh, this was classic. That was what made me decide I finally had to write about that for Scripps Howard. I didn't know whether to laugh or cry, so to some degree you do both. It was like a kind of a little mini train wreck. Once the Vatican saw the miscoverage, the Vatican put out a statement saying the perfectly obvious thing. You can't do confession in an iPhone. You know, at which point the press, some members of the press, turned, pivoted in the other directions, and said the Vatican had withdrawn its permission or withdrawn its blessing for the app because of something the app never said it could do. I mean, that's kind of like a Zen thing, right? I mean, the makers of the app never claimed you could go to confession through your phone, so they never stated that, which means the church never approved it. So how could the church withdraw its approval for something that never happened in the first place, other than a journalistic mistake? So instead of just saying, the Vatican today, responding to inaccurate coverage in the press, said blah, 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 trying to correct the scene, you got this weird sort of Vatican no longer happy about the confession app. It was one of the funniest things I've seen in a long time.
Do you think that this is due in part not only to the sexier version of the story that people tended to go with and the laziness of journalists and just checking out the facts, but also maybe a more fundamental failure to understand things inside the largest sector of Christianity on the planet, Roman Catholicism?
Yeah, well, and you throw in confession also in the second largest, which would be Eastern Orthodoxy. You put those two together, you're talking about millions and millions of Christians. That was fascinating. I don't know how to judge it. Laziness has certainly got to be in there. I would say this. I would love to walk into a major newsroom. Let's walk into the newsroom of the Times of London. Stand up on a chair, climb up on a chair, and turn and look out across the room and say, everybody in here who has been to confession within the last 12 months, raise your hand. And I would predict you wouldn't get anybody, or you wouldn't get many. So to some degree, I think a lot of people have this stereotypical image in their mind of confession. And what this was the old unhip thing, gets hip with the help of Apple, or something like that. That was the lead that got written in the minds of some journalists. And they didn't know enough about what confession actually was to be able to sit down and say, that doesn't sound any different from someone just going to confession with a guide. I mean, how many people in the Times of London newsroom do you think have heard of a guide to confession? Or a pamphlet for the ritual examination of your conscience? Or something like that. I just think it was a blind spot in the coverage, and the blind spot turned into, wow, isn't that funny? And then the next thing you know, you had all kinds of silly headlines. I mean, I've got a lot of them in my column that I wrote for Scripps. I mean, they were everywhere, you know. Can't make it to confession, there's an app for that. New church-approved iPhone offers confession on the go. Bless me, iPhone, for I have sinned. I mean, come on. People were just having fun. Who cares about facts?
That's quite a blind spot still, because it's not as though confession is some sort of a minor thing in the life of the historic church. It's not as though confession of sins is considered kind of a sideline to being a Catholic. It's a major factor of their piety in life.
Yeah. I also, maybe it's the problem is with the movies. Maybe the movies that have confession scenes just have the moment of the person kneeling, you know, at the confession booth and the little window slides open, which is not the way that many Catholics today say confession. Some do it that way. Some do it just simply face-to-face with a priest. Maybe they've got that scene in their mind that they could just picture someone jokingly kneeling down with their iPhone and maybe talking to a priest through the iPhone. But once again, let me stress, I never read a story in which anybody wrote factually what they thought the phone would do. And that, to me, just forget your attitudes toward religion, forget your attitudes toward the church. If you're going to write a story that says you're supposed to be able to go to confession through your phone, don't you think you would want to write how that works? I never saw anybody make a claim for how it works. The most details I found in any story about the entire app was by the column by Maureen Dowd, of all people, in the New York Times, who, while slightly making fun of the church, of course, and other things about it, she at least interacted with the phone enough to let you know what some of the promptings were, how they worked, you know, et cetera. Of course, that also meant she had to disagree with some of them, you know, in terms of their doctrinal content.
Terry Mattingly is founder and editor of GetReligion.org. He's director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, and he writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
You bet.
You will find a link to Terry's columns and to GetReligion.org at our website, issuesetc.org. Tomorrow on the program, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is going to join us, as she usually does on a weekly basis. Have you heard this story? A British couple wanted to be foster parents, not adopt, but merely be foster parents, and various human rights organizations opposed. Why? Because they are Christians and because they were opponents of homosexuality. They refused to tell any prospective foster children that homosexuality was an acceptable form of behavior. And so the British court said they can't have foster children. We'll talk with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse of the Ruth Institute about that tomorrow on Issues Etc. Now, I will admit that a iPhone app is not the best way to go about dealing with matters as weighty as the confession of sins. It may be a way, but it may not be the best way. It's about context. I mean, you do it on the same device you play Angry Birds and watch your YouTube videos. There may be a danger to trivialize something that is one of the weightiest matters in the Christian life that there is. However, if there are ways that we do find where we can, again, examine ourselves in the light of God's clear word, our thoughts, our words, our deeds, and if we find it on an iPhone app, well, no one's saying that the iPhone will hear your confession. No one's saying that the iPhone can absolve you. For that, there is no app necessary. For that, there is Christ's institution of his church and his pastors. You know what? They will always hear your confession. I dare you, call them any time of day or night. They will always hear your confession. If you have a faithful pastor, he will always give you those aids whereby you can examine yourself, unburden your conscience by the confession of sins. And guess what? If he's a faithful pastor, he will always bring Christ's absolution, the forgiveness of sins, based upon Christ's death and resurrection to you each and every time. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.